the queen of the insects?
I don't know who.
The monarch.
It's time for the children's hour.
Hey, that was Me Wee featuring Flutterbee and DJ Mike from a CD called Hip Hop for Kids. Me Wee is M-E-E-W-E-E, all one word. And so much love to give. Indeed we do. This is Katie Stone. You're tuned to the Children's Hour. Welcome to everyone in the room. Hello, everyone in the room. Hi, everybody. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Oh, there we go. There's actually a lot of people in the room, but they're putting finger puppets on, so it's kind of distracting.
We were distracted by all the finger puppets.
What can we say? Finger puppets will do that to you. Wow. We're getting pictures. They're posted right now to Instagram. You can follow us on Instagram. That posts on to Twitter and to Facebook and to all kinds of places. And we're so happy that you're all with us today. So I'm Katie Stone. Let's come around the room right over here and see who's in the room with us. Hi. Hi.
Hello, it's Haley.
Hi, it's Siobhan.
Good morning, I'm Sienna.
Hello, this is Julia.
Good morning, I'm Kaya.
Hello, it's Zen.
Hello, this is Octavia.
Hi, it's Amadeus.
Hey, it's Maya.
Well, everyone, it's so great to have you. Hello. We're back in studio here at KUNM in Albuquerque, New Mexico, on the campus of the University of New Mexico. And any news in the studio other than there's little critters on people's fingers everywhere? Yeah, please come to the mic.
Today I find out if I made it into a musical.
Oh, the stressful
period.
You too? Oh, are you at the same school by chance? Just curious.
No, but we were both do Cardboard Playhouse musicals.
Oh, so today's the day when the show parts are announced?
Yes.
Big
so
day.
What do you have to do to try out for a musical?
We have to audition and we have to sing like a minute or two of a song.
And then you do like little improv games and it's really fun.
And then you find out later. And what's the musical?
Alice in Wonderland, the musical junior.
Yeah. Fun. Well, good luck to you both. Yes, please.
Last time I went to the orthodontist, we set in stone the date I'm getting my braces off, which is sometime in April, I think.
Oh, thank goodness. Oh, that feels like a long process, doesn't it? Braces?
For the Science Olympiad tournament, my school got third place.
Congratulations! Wow! That was next week, or last week?
Yes.
Oh, neat. And you're going...
Yeah, and we get to go to state.
That's really exciting. Wow. Super cool. Well, no news is good news for me, except... Yes. Oh, hey, wait. We forgot over here, working at the board, our engineer in training, Miss Elliott.
Hi. Well, my school had... Model UN, and I won best position paper.
Wow! Elliot, that's awesome! We are super excited about this show. We have interviewed the governor, Michelle Lujan Grisham. Sienna, you were part of that interview.
Yeah.
What can you tell us about that interview? What was it like?
It was pretty fun. Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham was really funny.
She was funny. She kind of made fun of me a little, but that's okay. I have thick skin. And I just thought she did a great job with you guys. And you asked such good questions. And I know they're questions that all kinds of kids who are listening right now have themselves, including about park testing and what's going to happen this year with park testing. We're going to get right into it. You are tuned to the Children's Hour. But first, we're going to go to a little of this. The governor's right-hand woman is a woman named Nora Sackett. And she told us this cool thing.
She told us that you used to play this song called Nora's Room, and she always thought it was so cool that you would play it because her name was Nora.
And this one is going out to you, Nora. This is the Children's Hour.
Crash, bang, crash, bang, boom. Something's going on in Nora's room. Crash, bang. Crash, bang, boom. Something going on in Nora's room. Crash, bang. Crash, bang, boom. Something going on in Nora's room. Crash, bang. Crash, bang, boom. Something going on in Nora's room. Crash, bang. Crash, bang, boom. Something's going on in Nora's room. Sounds like girls. Sounds like boys. Sounds like someone's making lots of noise. Crash, bang. Crash, bang, boom. Something going on. Noise does a little girl need? Sounds like the whole city zoo got freed. Sounds like the bear is dancing with the moose. They like to dance when they're on the loose. Sounds like hippos at a hippo hop, or when you pick up a piano and you let it drop, or 16 pumpkins falling off a truck, or a couple of gorillas playing duck, 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 goose. Bang, crash, bang, boom. Something's going on in Nora's room. Crash, bang, crash, bang, boom. Something's going on in Nora's room. London Bridge is really falling down, or a couple of giants are sitting on a town, or 47 monkeys are talking on the phone to 47 dogs who are fighting for a bone. Bark, bark, bang, crash, bang, boom. Something's going on in Nora's room. Crash, bang, crash, bang, boom. Something's going on in Nora's room. Sounds like a rodeo right upstairs, or a bunch of rhinos playing musical chairs. Sounds like a dump truck dumping its junk, or an elephant hoedown. Swing your trunk. Crash, bang, crash, bang, boom. Something's going on in Nora's room. Crash, bang, crash, bang, boom. Something's going on in Nora's room. Sounds like girls, sounds like boys. Sounds like someone's making lots of noise. And the sign on her door says, enter if you dare. So I just say, what's going on in there?
Nothing.
Crash, bang, boom. Something's going on in Nora's room. Crash, bang, crash, bang.
Today on the Children's Hour, we have Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham here with us. I'm Leela Allen.
And I'm Sienna Allen.
Describe the job of a state governor and the balance of powers between you and the judicial and the legislative branches.
Well, so we'll do the latter question first, right? That we operate much like our founding fathers for the U.S. Constitution, that if you're going to have an effective government with the right checks and balances, right, you've got policymakers, that's your legislative branch, those are our representatives and state senators. Then you have to have an executive, so they set the policy, and then I have to implement that policy. So it's my job to take every idea that they pass, and if I think it's a good idea, I sign that bill into a law, and I have to then meet the requirements of that law. So I operate the government. And then the judicial branch is really that check and balance. They're the oversight function. Make sure that if there are challenges or questions about who's doing what, that there's someone who can make a final decision. You have that kind of accountability and oversight. So we're all co-equals. We're all independent. I can't boss them around directly, and they can't boss me around. And it is really the hallmark of an effective democracy. Otherwise, you have all the power focused on one person or one entity, and it is not a fair representation to the people that you are serving. So I think it's a very effective model, and I get to do the fun work. I get to implement all these good ideas.
What does an average day look like?
Well, I never really know. There's no such thing as an average day. So the beauty of my job, usually your Achilles heel is also your greatest strength, like advocacy. You get passionate about everything, but sometimes it's hard to be focused. So a governor's day, particularly right now with the legislative session, is I don't have much control. So it's communicating like this radio show today and dealing with the media and getting stories out. It's meeting with my leadership team, making sure that we're on track to get our work done for the day. Then I've got to take meetings for people who have emergencies or could be a wildfire somewhere or an issue with an airplane or an airport or hikers who were lost. And I have to send out the National Guard. I've got legal issues that pop up, and I've got to get my lawyers all ready to go, make sure that they're taking care of that. I have constituents that come into our office or call us, and they have problems, all kinds of problems. They can't get their benefits, or they lost their Medicaid, which is a health care benefit, or they're worried about child care, and we've got to get all of that figured out. And then I just get to meet with constituents who just want to know what our priorities are, and they want to be able to weigh in. So it's a lot of hands-on work, it's a lot of traveling, and it's a lot of meetings. And it's hard to control it, because it depends on what's going on every single day, sort of dictates what my day is like.
Do you live in the governor's mansion? What's it like?
So I do live in the governor's mansion. So most states have a governor's residence or a mansion. And in some states, the governor's not required to live in it. But in our state, you are. If the governor chooses not to live in this beautiful Santa Fe mansion, then it goes to a foundation. And then we may not be able to use it for the public in the way that we want to, because it belongs to all of us. So like all the governors before me, once we had a mansion, I live in the mansion, and it's beautiful and incredible. And I'm learning things. Even though I grew up in Santa Fe, it's on 32 acres, just in an area I still refer to as North Hill, sort of above where they do Zozobra, above Fort Marcy. And it's got stables. They're empty. It's got incredible yards, an incredible view on a hill. It's got this big public part where we showcase art, and we invite dignitaries and legislators and kids who are interested, just like you are, in making a difference in their community to come over and to look at it and have a tour and have a meal, come to a reception. And then there's like this area where they call it the private residence, and it's got three bedrooms, a kind of a guest area for dignitaries, and an office, and that's where I live.
Do you work 24/7 around the clock?
So I get sleep, I do, but I'm on call 24/7, and I've always had jobs that are difficult for something I like to refer to as a good work-life balance. But my days start pretty early. I often will work from 6:30 or 7 in the morning until 11 or 12 o'clock at night, and I work weekends too.
Are you still governor when you travel?
I am. And governors are required to travel with folks. So in New Mexico, and so do most of the states, I actually have state police officers assigned to me to make sure that the public who's interacting with me is always safe and to make sure that I'm always safe. So even when I go on vacation, so if I were to go hiking in the summer, a state police officer has to go with me and has to hike with me. So I can't fib that I hiked 10 miles when I only did 2, because they tell on you. So when I travel, even for personal reasons, I'm always the governor.
Did you want to be a governor when you were a kid?
I don't think so. It's hard for me to remember when I first started to think about things I wanted to do. And the reason I said I don't think so is some of my friends and colleagues have said to me, oh, when you were first in a cabinet secretary running a department, you said that you really wanted to be the governor or the attorney general. And I'm sure I said that because I would get frustrated that I wasn't the ultimate decision maker. And when I was trying to right a wrong, I couldn't convince people that kids weren't safe or getting the education and support that they needed, and families who were taking care of their parents and loved ones and disabled children, they weren't getting the services and supports that they needed. And I would get really upset. And I thought, well, if I could be the governor, or if I was the attorney general and I had all that legal power to protect consumers. So I'm sure I probably did say that, but it didn't come clear to me about the role I might play until I got elected to my first office at the Bernalillo County Commission. And I realized how much good you can do if you have the support of your constituents in a job like this. And so then I got really excited about coming home and being governor of the state that I love and believe in.
So who inspired you?
You know, I've got lots of heroines in my life, but this probably won't surprise you. So our listeners can't see that you've got a mom and an older sister here cheering you on. But, you know, my mom was this incredible advocate. A woman who got married when she was just 18, had me by the time she was 19. She met my father in Hamburg, Germany. He was a captain in the Air Force. She was what they call, it's not very nice, an Air Force brat, which basically meant she was traveling the world with her Air Force family and her dad. And she came to this little state, New Mexico, and I mean little by population, right? And had no connection to it. And had 3 children. And my youngest sister, who I've lost, was only 2 years old and was really sick. And so here's basically a really young woman responsible for 3 children who has a real tragedy in her family. And she chose to take that on and to fight against healthcare that wasn't meeting my sister or family's needs, against a state that thought that children with disabilities should live in institutions and should not be, they didn't believe in the 60s that you should even get to go to school for things like blindness and deafness, let alone things that we call developmental disabilities or challenges. Now we're clear. These are special kids with special needs, and they have gifts that we ought to embrace and cherish and promote and create educational supports that give them the same opportunities that we give to everyone. But it wasn't like that in the 60s, and my mom had no tolerance for it. And she ruffled a ton of feathers, and she made a difference for so many families. And so my mom is a clear champion in my life, and my dad did the same kind of work. And I was really lucky to grow up in a family of champions.
How is being governor different from being a congresswoman?
You know, I can make decisions and just do them, right? So if you say to me, how do you ladies feel about PARC?
I don't think that the effects of it are going to where they should be.
Me too. And as a congresswoman, I have to convince 535 other individuals, many of whom don't live in New Mexico, don't agree with me, that my idea about high-stakes testing is right. And then I have to convince, even if I can get them to pass it, then I have to convince the president that may or may not care about New Mexico or New Mexico's education system. And we've got a president, in my opinion right now, that doesn't believe in public education. Now, I just have to make the decision and then do it. And there are some things I need that independent branch, like policymakers, the legislature. So if they don't give me funding, then I can't find an assessment tool or an accountability vehicle so parents and students know where they are each year and can help direct the kind of educational support that they want. But I get to make the decision, and I get to direct the public education department. And that is awesome.
What are you going to replace it with, and how is it going to be different from the park test?
Well, so it's not going to be high stakes, right? High stakes basically means that we just teach to a test. We want you to perform a certain way on a test, and high stakes means that everything is tied to that test score, which means we don't teach anything else. So if you're not taking that test for the rest of your life and at work, it has no relevance on your ability to problem solve or to work. And in fact, all the new national studies looking at high stakes testing, including PARC, say exactly what you said, that it's making no measurable difference, that it's not helping students at all. So We're looking at maybe creating what we call a New Mexico tool. So it's some kind of testing, but there's learning first. And there is looking at where you start and having routine checks about whether you feel and your educators and parents feel like you're demonstrating in a number of ways, not just a test, that you're, you know, meeting your own personal education goals, so that feel like you can do more math problems and you understand the concepts, that you're feeling really good about where you are in writing and reading because you're reading both at home and in class and you're reading things that are valuable and important to you that meet your own goals and needs. So we're going to have to think about a New Mexico tool, and we're going to engage parents and students to help us create it. And our timeline is quick. We're hoping to get all that work done so we have a whole new system in place by this coming August.
So will there be a PARC test this year?
So there's going to be what we call a simplified version. So we're going to spend at least an hour and a half less on each component of PARC. So more time teaching, less time testing. We're looking at whether the feds are going to give us permission to streamline how we're doing that more right now. And then we're going to be developing tools, and I don't want to call them tests. I want you to help me figure out what that is for the rest of the year. But it would be an unfair and untrue statement to say that no educator is going to pop into your classroom and say that you don't have to do some part of a test. And I'll tell you why. We have federal funds that come here that are tied to a plan, and the plan requires us to do some testing that looks a lot like the current PARC. And so if I don't meet most of those standards, I would lose federal funds. So you'll see less of it. You'll see more teaching. You'll get to have more opinions about what works and what doesn't work. We think that we can refine the subjects that we're focusing the limited time in PARC testing. And then after this semester, we're done. And then we go to something that's meaningful next year.
How are you going to deal with the shortage of teachers?
Well, I hope that you're going to help me. I want you right now on the radio say it's so fun for teachers to teach and that you are great students and you're so excited, because we're going to need renewed energy and commitment. But there are things that government can do. Here's the easy things. State government's going to respect teachers and everybody in public education and give them dignity. We're going to listen to them and their opinions. Now we have to do some other things that allow them to do what they want, which is teach. We have to pay them enough that they can raise their own families in New Mexico. So the lowest paid teachers in New Mexico are going to get a whopping 10% raise. No one will make less than $12 in the classroom. So the men and women who keep your schools clean and drive your school buses and serve you lunch, no one makes less than 12, and our goal is to be much higher than that. So overall, 6% more in for teacher raises. We're going to pay for all their extra education and professional development so they can actually get more raises. We're going to lower their individual health care costs so there's more money in their paycheck. We're going to do loan forgiveness and pay for school on the front end, so we've got a pipeline of educators coming in. We're going to allow them again to teach in the classroom, and we're going to pump about $501 million into public education. And so it's an exciting time to be an educator in New Mexico. And we think that that will address our teacher shortages. One last thing, I know I'm too long-winded, but there are things that we have to do while all of that takes hold. So we're asking our retired teachers, you know, who can and want to come back, whose students miss them and believe that they can make a difference. There's a thing called alternative licensure. So I'm a lawyer, so maybe I could go to and teach a civics class in mid-school. So you find folks who have expertise who can help. Don't replace educators, but help with those burdens of those oversized classrooms. So we're going to do all those things while we build a brand new pipeline of teachers and other public education workers.
That sounds like a good idea. In one of my classes, we don't have a teacher right now.
What class is that?
My algebra class.
Algebra class. So see, we need a math professor from a college or a mathematician or an engineer who's willing, who's retired, who can come into a classroom and help. And we actually train them to teach, because knowing something doesn't mean that you're very good at teaching it. So we train you up right quick, and then we give them a special license that's never intended to replace a full-time educator, but gets you the algebra instruction that you need.
Just like to have some consistency of a teacher until they can find a permanent role.
It's so important, because the substitute teaching environment is really hard on the students. And honestly, it's really hard on the substitute teachers too.
What are your plans to deal with climate change?
Everything, right? We have 12 years to reverse the damaging and devastating effects of climate change. And I think New Mexico should be identified as the clean energy state for the country. The most important thing that I can do is move away from fossil fuels. That's the best thing I can do. So we're going to set things called RPS, Renewable Portfolio Standards. It's actually a hard bill to get passed in this legislative session. So this is a good chance for me to tell every kid out there listening to get involved. And there's lots of climate champions who are school age kids all around the state who get your parents involved, because I need that bill. And it would say that we have to do more geothermal, more wind and solar, which don't create greenhouse gases or emissions. They lower our carbon footprint, and it's renewable, right? So we never run out of it. I need that. And I need to show that I'm joining the U.S. Climate Alliance so that I meet the Paris Accord requirements, which is by 2030, we've got a 45% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. This is how we start to reverse, basically, right, the overheating of our planet. And I'm going to do this in oil and gas, because New Mexico has a lot of oil and gas. So we're leaking one of the most dangerous, devastating greenhouse gases, methane. And I'm going to do something called methane mitigation or recapture. So I'm going to require all these oil and gas companies to capture all their leaking methane so that it's not out into the atmosphere. We use it like you do, it's natural gas. And it's cleaner than our fossil fuels, so we can use it. It's jobs for detection, it's jobs for climate protection. It's also money that we could put into, say, early childhood education. So there's all kinds of great ways that we can improve where we are. And then we can create one more thing called sort of clean energy standards. So it's telling everybody that all the utility companies that they have to have a better clean energy portfolio.
What are you going to do that will affect kids?
So we're going to engage young people in the health and well-being of our state. We're going to improve public education. So instead of 50th, we can aim to be number one. I'm calling it a moonshot. I'm going to protect the earth, the planet. I'm going to create space for us to be the number one state for outdoor activities and an outdoor economy, which means that we're preserving the planet and doing our part to reverse the damaging and dramatic effects of climate change. We're going to invest in child well-being. I'm going to have a youth advisory council so that young people give me good ideas about what I should do as governor. So anyone out there listening, anyone out there interviewing me, Katie cannot be on my youth advisory council. She's just not young enough. But I do. These fresh ideas keep people invited, and young people have great ideas. Those are just some of the things. We're going to create a children's cabinet. I could go on for a long time. Children are going to be the focus of this administration.
Thank you so much for being here with us on the Children's Hour.
You are welcome. Thank you for having me on the Children's Hour.
You're listening to the Children's Hour. We'll be right back.
Supporting our community means a lot to Albuquerque-based Kay and Molly Textiles, which is why they're proud to support the Children's Hour podcasts. Their print studio is committed to creating great jobs that include health and education benefits, leadership development, and flexible hours for new immigrants and refugees in Albuquerque. Find their hand-printed towels at their retail store or in a store near you nationwide. Find out more at kandmolly.com. That's KEIandMolly.com. The Children's Hour podcast is made possible in part by Meow Wolf. Meow Wolf, your portal to the multiverse. Meow Wolf proudly supports the Children's Hour Incorporated.
Stick with us, we're talking butterflies next.
Butterfly, dance across the sky to me. Come and spend some time with me. I promise not to pin you down or even frown if you have to fly away into someone else's dream. Come and spend some time with me. Linger just a little while, butterfly style, for you flitter away. I used to think that butterflies were meant for catching, till the time I caught one in my net. Took it home and tried to make it happy, but the very next day, butterfly I buried in the meadow, where I'd found it flying so free. After that, I learned my lesson. If you love a butterfly, if you love it, let it be. Again, come and rest your wings, my friend. I promise not to pin you down or even frown if you have to fly away into someone else's dream. Come and spend some time with me. Linger just a little while, butterfly style, for you flitter away, for you flitter away.
That is The Butterfly Song by Pink Martini, and they are on a CD called, and this is where my French does not pan out, Je dis oui, something like that. The Butterfly Song, Pink Martini. You are tuned to the Children's Hour. We sure hope you enjoyed our interview with our Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham. She really has a lot of great plans, and I really hope that kids in particular heard her call to join her youth advisory board, because she's really going to need to hear from you kids to know what to do for you kids. And you know what? People who are your representatives, they don't know your point of view unless you tell them. So you can always write to our governor anytime and tell her your thoughts. Well, I'm Katie Stone. You are tuned to the Children's Hour, a whole crew full of people here. Hello. Hello, crew.
Hi. Hi.
But we also want to introduce Mr. Cliff Ross. He is a friend of bees and butterflies.
And I'm also the director of Celebrate Planet Earth, which is a community of kids who love and protect the Earth. And if you go to celebrateplanetearth.org, you can join that community. You can post exactly what it is you do to care and protect for the Earth, and join a group of kids all over the country who are planting seeds and taking care of birds, butterflies, and bees as a way of taking care of the Earth.
Love that. What a cool thing. Well, you know, we have a lot of questions in the studio for you. And should I start? Anybody else? Okay, Sienna's going to start. Okay, go for it. Go for it. Go, Maya, either one of you. You're so polite. They're like, no, you. Okay.
How long is a butterfly's lifespan?
Well, different butterflies have different lifespans, but the ones that we're most familiar with tend to be in the range of, I would say, about a little over a month. And basically the way that goes is after they hatch as an egg, there'll be a caterpillar, usually for a week to 10 days. They'll go into their chrysalis and be in between. If you want to know what they're doing, they'll melt and kind of hang out in that chrysalis for another week. And then when they emerge, they usually are adults, where they flutter among the flowers and among themselves for another 2 to 3 weeks.
So here it is. It's we're broadcasting today in February. And I always think the butterflies, I've always imagined all the butterflies we see in the summer here in New Mexico or anywhere, they go on what I would do if I was a butterfly. They go to Mexico and they relax and they live there for a while. And I guess the curiosity is, first of all, is that really true? Do all the butterflies migrate? And second of all, those butterflies who do migrate, they only live 4 weeks. So how do they get all the way to Mexico in 4 weeks?
Well, what ends up happening, actually, there are two groups of butterflies, painted migrating butterflies, in this hemisphere. They're the painted lady butterflies and the monarchs. And both of those do basically start their season with the rainy seasons in Mexico, and the eggs all hatch, and then they begin to migrate north. And what happens is they'll go through their life cycle multiple times during the migration. So as they go up to Canada, you might get 2 or 3 generations of painted lady or monarchs. And and what the monarchs do, the monarchs actually will migrate all the way back to Mexico, where the painted ladies will turn around, but they won't quite get all the way back. So it's usually the butterflies that stayed in Mexico every year that are the source of the next year's butterflies, and that you get these other butterflies migrating with the seasons up and down as the flowers bloom. But there are a lot of other butterflies that don't migrate. And what those guys do is what the difference is when it becomes winter, when it gets cold, that has a direct effect on their life cycle. It really kind of like they don't hibernate, but they really slow down. So in that in-between state when they're a pupa, that normally is a week in the summer, in the winter that can last 6 weeks to 2 months to 3 months. And so that's how they overwinter and not freeze. They're in an insulated little pupa buried somewhere in the woods. And when things heat up or warm up, they'll emerge as butterflies.
What types of butterflies live in New Mexico?
Oh, we get a whole slew of butterflies. But the ones that most people really know are the swallowtails and the painted ladies, I think, are the two most kind of dominant. Once in a while, we do get a monarch coming through. But most of all, the painted lady butterflies migrate through, and you'll see them all summer. They're the ones that have that brown and orange color. And they migrate through generally back towards Mexico in September or October. So we, on chamiza bushes and those late blooming flowers in the fall, you'll see the butterflies as they migrate back through the state.
Are they living off of nectar? Is that what they eat?
So the caterpillars live off of a different food source. They live off the different host plants, leaves, and the green part of plants. But the butterflies, once they emerge, get all their calories from the nectar that they and unlike bees, they don't turn it into honey. They're able to actually just use the pure nectar as their primary source of water and nutrients.
What's the main thing? And Zen, you mentioned this off mic, but butterflies have been with us a very long time evolutionarily. How many years did you say?
Over 70 million years.
And so we were talking off the mic. Wouldn't it be hilarious to imagine a butterfly landing on a dinosaur? Is that even a possibility?
Indeed. However, 9 times out of 10, if it was a predatory dinosaur, it'd probably eat it. Free calories.
Oh, yikes. What are the other enemies of butterflies other than dinosaurs? Well, they don't have to worry about those.
Fascinating things about butterflies when you look at them is their whole way of flying, their flutter, is actually designed as a way of their survival from predators, because that odd little flight pattern makes it really difficult for more difficult for birds who feed off butterflies to actually zone in and catch them. It's a little evasive maneuver they've developed, but primarily birds are the only ones who can reach them while they're flying.
Mm.
How can we help the bees and butterflies so they can help us better?
Well, the key, I think, the one thing that we really stress, if you really want to take care of bees and butterflies, plant seeds, plant flowers. Because what ends up happening is it's only when these migrating butterflies come through, they're going to be dependent on flowers opening up with nectar to feed them. So if you want to feed them, plant flowers. And what's beautiful about that is once you've done that the initial time, afterwards, every time the butterflies pay for that by pollinating those flowers and creating more seeds, so your flowers will eventually grow into these beautiful giant corridors, which the bees and butterflies can fly their fly zones, their fly routes.
And what kind of plants do bees and butterflies like to eat?
If there's a flower, in all probability, there's a bee or butterfly who's feeding off that flower. Because what happens is the flowers put out a little bit of nectar. And the flowers are very smart that they will put every day. They won't put all the nectar out. They'll put a little out every day so that the bees and butterflies will return to it, increasing the chance that they will be pollinated. So
it's a win for the flowers and the plants.
It's a win for the flowers. That what we call the butterflies and the bees there and the flowers, they're all what we call we beings, which means you don't get one without the other. There's no such thing as a happy butterfly without a flower. There's no such thing as a happy bee without a flower. They just really, they need each other completely to be. And so that's what we call them we bees.
Yeah, that's why there was no butterflies before flowers were around, because of the fact that they're completely reliant on each other.
Interesting.
And yeah.
That's fascinating. And so if folks do want to get involved, you brought some, I'm going to shake them. You brought some seed packets here for us to plant. You brought us sunflowers.
We have to. And so if you go on at Celebrate Planet Earth, what we do is we distribute. We give out lots and lots of sunflower packets. We give out probably a couple hundred thousand packs of sunflower seeds out every year for kids all over the country to plant. We give out in the spring, we send out live butterflies for anybody who wants to take care of and nurture live butterflies. We have those available. And what I brought in to the studio are these pet little bees and butterflies that were made by the women down in the rainforest for us. And what we do is when we pay them to make these little pets for us, and we bring them up here because what we discovered is why one of the really tragedies, not tragedies, but if you ask people what is their favorite pet, Most people will not say bees or butterflies. And the reason is obvious. A bee, that stinger, just seems to get in the way. And with butterflies, they seem a little too fragile. So we finally solved the problem by having these women hand-knit these pet bees and butterflies. And what's beautiful is you get all the advantages of any pet with these bees and butterflies. You can pet them, and you can also, really, what's wonderful about the bees and the butterflies is they have a whole language of themselves, that they are, you can get all the benefits and the wisdom of a bee and a butterfly from the hand-knit bees and butterflies.
I love it. Celebrate the Earth.
Celebrate Planet Earth.
Celebrate
planetearth.org. And really, and we'd love anybody who hears this, go on, post, and we will make you a lifetime member, and we will strew to you everything you need to continue to enjoy taking care of the bees and the butterflies and the flowers. And seriously, there is nothing else you can do. That one other question somebody was asking, a lot of people are very concerned about what's happening to bees. And our honeybee populations over the last several years have been kind of decimated by a virus, a bug, that seems to be taking them out. And there's really wonderful news now that there's a little fungus that if you add the fungus to the water of the bees, it seems to fortify their immune systems and could be the key to the rebounding of the bee populations. So people should keep their ears open and find out. And what we'd love eventually is to have a whole community of kids who are out there helping the bees by putting fungi out in their water, as well as planting seeds and planting seeds for their food. I really, if we take care of the bees and the butterflies, we take care of all of us, because it's the bees and butterflies that I brought here, some wonderful buckeye tree seeds. These are an example of a seed that would not be here if it weren't for a bee taking that extra bit of energy to get up to one more flower and pollinate that flower. And what got created is this beautiful tree seed. And inside the seed is a baby tree that's going to give us the oxygen we need to breathe. It's all in there. And this wouldn't be here if it weren't for the bees. So if we take care of the bees, we're taking care of ourselves. If we take care of the butterflies, we're taking care of ourselves. And so my job here is to really just see if I can get more of you, more kids out there to step up and join us in helping taking care of the bees and the butterflies.
Thank you so much, Cliff. It's been great to talk to you. CelebratePlanetEarth.org is the website. It has all kinds of information. And we just love our puppets. Everybody's playing with them in here. So thank you so much for being with us on the Children's Hour.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Flutter by, butterfly, the painted insect of the sky. Flying low, flying high, my pretty butterfly. Once you were an egg, laid upon a leaf, small and shiny and white, but that time was only brief. So flutter by, butterfly, the painted insect of the sky, flying low, flying high, my pretty butterfly. Then you were a caterpillar, eating without stop, munching tasty leaves, till you think you're about to pop. So flutter by, butterfly, the painted insect of the sky, flying low, flying high, my pretty butterfly. Then you'll form a cocoon they call a chrysalis. Stay there safe inside for several weeks of rest.
The Children's Hour is produced by Katie Stone and all of us on the Children's Hour Kids Crew.
Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search for the Children's Hour Radio Show.
We post from the show, links to our podcasts, and so much more.
We want to thank everyone for being with us on the show. Thank you, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham, for being with us today. And also, thank you very much to Cliff Ross, Mr. Cliff, the Butterfly Man. Thanks so very much. And coming up next on the Children's Hour, this is Uncle Neptune.
Thanks for listening to the Children's Hour.
Wanna jump up and shout. Love makes you wanna dance all about. Love makes you wanna forget about everything. Love makes the world go round. Love makes you wanna float in the air. Love makes you wanna fall off your chair. Love makes you wanna throw away all your cares. Love makes the world. Love makes you glad. Love makes you feel it's the best time you've had. Love makes you wanna reach to the moon. Love makes you think that forever's too soon to lose. Love makes you wanna smile all day long. Love makes you wanna sing a sweet song. Love makes you wanna get the world to sing along. Love makes the world go. The best time you've had. Love makes you wanna reach for the moon. Love makes you think that forever's too soon to lose. Love makes you wanna laugh all day long. Love makes you wanna sing a sweet song. Love makes you wanna get the world to sing along. Love makes the world go round. Love.
Children's Hour is a production of the Children's Hour Incorporated, a New Mexico nonprofit dedicated to producing high-quality, non-commercial, educational children's public radio. Find out more about us and support our work at childrenshour.org. Our theme music was written by C.K. Barlow. Let us know what you think of the show, sign up for our public events, and follow us on social media. It's all at childrenshour.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Katie Stone.